Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Sure is.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode
of Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. Oh my gosh.
Wow, I can't even speak right now. It's amazing.
Well, as was the case in the mini episode, we are still recording separately as I am struggling with a cold. So if things sound a little different, that is why. Unfortunately, we are not together.
But we have a great topic for you today. This is something that has been on Madigan's list, I feel like, for a while. You were the first person to introduce this topic to me because this isn't something that I had really thought about before as kind of like a pervasive thing until I'd really like stopped to think about the fact that brands do this to varying degrees. I think that it had occurred to me like growing up how much certain brands affected my self-esteem and my self-worth.
Right.
You know, kind of those like bigger brands that we're going to get into that were very, very prevalent in the like early 2000s, like when we were kids, like in middle school and high school, things like Victoria's Secret and Abercrombie and Fitch and Hollister, like those brands, and how kind of what they were perpetuating was this ideal, quote in quotes, you know, as far as like body type was concerned.
Yeah.
And tying that to like class and other things.
Race. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I started doing my research on, you know, just focusing on clothing companies and body shaming. But every time you read anything about a clothing company that fat shames and is very outwardly body shaming, typically you will find a lot of very racist, misogynistic undertones within that company as well. Like they really do go hand in hand. So I think that there's so much responsibility that we need to keep on our brands because, you know, we discuss so often how media had affected us growing up, especially looking at magazines and commercials and ads and things like that. I mean, I always remember the Calvin Klein ads were like really ingrained in my memory, especially in the 90s. I talk about that a little bit later in my notes as well. But, you know, there are certain things and certain images that were really heavily perpetuated when we were children where we think of, you know, the model in the ad, but we don't always think about the brains behind all of those things. And that is the brand that is creating this world of their customers and what they want their customer to look like and who you have to be in order to be worthy enough to wear their clothes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so fucked up.
It is definitely. And before we get into kind of like talking about these brands specifically and getting kind of deeper into these issues, I do want to say that we are going to be talking about bodies in this episode. We're going to be talking, I know that I have some numbers and things in my notes. So if that is something that is triggering for you, if you are struggling, if you don't want to hear about that kind of thing, then this might be an episode that you want to just skip altogether. So I just want to say that off the top, you know,
yes,
not trying to trigger anybody over here.
Definitely not. And I think also along with this episode in the show notes, I will add some resources for everybody just in case they feel like they need some support or maybe they, you know, learned something about themselves within this episode and they need to reach out for some help. We will give those resources for that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting. I know that every generation kind of struggles with their own body issues that have to do with whatever the beauty standard is.
Whatever that aesthetic is, right?
Right. Yeah. And so I know that there has been a lot said. I mean, we had an entire episode kind of talking about social media and face filters and body filters and what that does to you psychologically. And I know that a lot of Gen Z kids, a lot of people on the internet right now struggle with their own self-image. But I think in doing my prep for this episode, what I found to be really triggering for myself was that a lot of these brands and a lot of these things that we see as body shaming in brand culture, while it still exists absolutely now today, the prevalence of it throughout the 2000s because it was so tied to the beauty standard at the time, which was very like thin, very like thin, flat. And that kind of makes me nervous because I'm seeing a lot of those fashion trends come back. I'm seeing the beauty standard shift again. And not to say that one is healthier than the other. It's just I have a, it triggers me personally because it was from my like upbringing.
Right. Right. Well, there is, there has been a culture of celebrating extreme thinness in the past. And I do touch on one era in particular because it was one that was very like memorable to me and like very noticeable to me at the time. And that was the heroin chic era of the 90s. Yeah, it was very androgynous, dark circles under the eyes, very, very, very emaciatedly skinny.
Frail. I mean, it was basically like you wanted to look frail, essentially. So,
and like you were on drugs. Like that was part of the grunge culture. Like there was, that was the whole culture of the 90s. And the model that kind of started this whole trend was a woman by the name of Gia, is it Karangni? I feel like I'm going to say her name wrong. And she's like a supermodel.
Gia, though. She is a supermodel. Angelina Jolie played her in a movie. There's a wonderful...
Yeah, in the movie, Gia. Yeah, but the one that, great. Like, the one that I always remember is Kate Moss. But another one was Jamie King. Essentially, anybody that was around these three photographers, two in particular who were called the Sorrenti brothers, they were these photographers that really made this, like, almost cut and paste grunge teenage thing cool, and it kind of catapulted into mainstream fashion design like it had never had before, and it kind of put that very young waif-like drug-induced image kind of on the map until, and I'm really fascinated by the story, so I like know a lot about it, but David Sorrenti was actually only 21 years old when he passed away of a heroin overdose, which kind of started the end of that whole era. But it then went into the 2000s, which still very much had that same kind of vibe, but less like heroin induced.
Well,
if that
yeah,
makes sense.
The thing is, like, the thing that makes that really interesting to me is that in the 90s, that whole heroin chic kind of grungy thing, you were wearing like bigger, baggier clothes. It was just on a much frailer frame.
And you like, almost looked like a hanger.
Right.
With the clothes on you.
Yes. And it was more of a like aesthetic as far as like your body frame being that kind of like very thin, frail frame.
Yeah.
And I think
almost less
than
the clothes that they were wearing, but more so the frame in which was wearing it.
I think coming out of that, the fashion industry kind of went in a different direction and the beauty standard went in a different direction because it became about health, right? So that's what it was all about in the early 2000s. It was like you wanted to be Britney. You wanted to have six-pack abs because she did literally 1,000 sit-ups every day. You wanted to look like Jennifer Aniston, which was like very like strong, like, and you wanted to be tan, you wanted to look healthy, you wanted to look like you had
you wanted
muscle.
To be very tan. We all wanted to be very, very tan.
Right. But along with that, it was like you were
it was the yogis and the green smoothies,
right,
and
the Pilates strength. And
yeah,
you only
all
wanted...
of that kind of evolved. Yeah.
Yes. And so you were only of value physically if you looked like you were in this kind of very top shape. And so along with that went with clothing that was very tight and short, like very, very low rise jeans. That's why I fear the low rise jean trend coming back. Like I feel like a lot of Gen Z are making fun of millennials for like being like, you will, you know, you can rip my high-waisted jeans out of my fucking cold, dead hands.
Right, because, for real.
Because we're traumatized by low-rise jeans because it
and wearing low-rise jeans with crop tops, traumatizing.
Right, because it required you to have a very flat stomach, or it didn't require you to, right? Like that was, but that was the beauty standard, was like, if
but
you're going
to wear
this.
But that was the message that was being sent, right?
Then you need to look like Christina Aguilera. You need to look like Britney Spears, right? Because that's what those jeans are supposed to show off, is like this like ideal, right? Which was very damaging, I think, to a lot of us. And for, I know it was a big issue for a lot of women of color who have like naturally curvier bodies in general, or anyone who had hips and a butt, like try wearing super low rise jeans.
It's not going to work. Have, like, hips yeah. and a butt. And you know, that's why the whale's tail became popular. I'm just kidding. I'm just rolling with it.
As we're about to get into, these brands made you feel like shit if you didn't look like that. They were like, buy our clothes, but also make sure you look like these models if you're going to wear our clothes.
Right. We're not here to make you look good. You have to look good and work hard to look good in our clothes, you know?
Right. And you want to, because that's the standard, right? And so it was this never-ending cycle of perpetuating things like disordered eating or exercise bulimia to get to a place where you could show off the fact that you're wearing the latest low-rise Hollister jeans to school.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. Let's actually talk about some of those brands. The first one that I have written is one that I think was the most prevalent in my life throughout my middle school years in particular, and that is Abercrombie and Fitch, kind of slash Hollister, because they're owned by the same people, but all my notes are technically on Abercrombie. But oh my God, I would beg my mother to spend $40 on a t-shirt with a moose on it. And I'm so sorry, Mom. I'm so sorry.
Listen, I will say this, and I hated it at the time, because before I went into my rebellious emo phase, I was actually like a cheerleader. All my friends wore Abercrombie and Fitch and Hollister.
Yeah.
And my family, like, at the time, like, could not afford that. So we never bought Abercrombie or Hollister, and I always felt like... like that was a bad thing, but now I'm kind of like, oh my God, it was a badge of honor.
It was a blessing in disguise. Well, I actually, before we even like get into any of this, I had kind of like an eye-opening experience at school when I was a kid, because like I lived two very different like realities between my school life and my skating life all the time when I was a kid, and all my friends at skating were like unbelievably wealthy. Like, I was the poor friend.
Sport.
It's a really rich sport. Like, everybody was like stinking fucking rich. And I just always felt like, you know, I would save my money to be able to buy myself a Juicy Couture tracksuit that I literally wore for 10 years just to make worth it. You know what I mean? And like, it was something, it like, we were more well off when I was growing up and my dad was working. So like, when I was at school, in comparison, I probably had a lot more than a lot of my other classmates did. And that was something that I never really realized. And also, privilege surrounding Abercrombie was never really something that I thought about. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget something that a friend of mine named Mary said to me in middle school. She was Black, and I went to a school that was very, very diverse. And I was wearing like a long sleeve Abercrombie shirt under my uniform, and it said Abercrombie down the sleeve. And she looked at me and she was like, "That's a white girl store." And I had never thought of it like that before. Because I always was just like, well, but I want to like fit in with all the rich kids at skating, and I'm gonna spend the $40 on the moose shirt, and I'm gonna be super cool, and I'm gonna totally fit in. I had never heard anyone talk shit about Abercrombie at all, and that was a huge like, well, wait, what?
Moment It was very coded. So in 2013, there were comments from the Abercrombie CEO Mike Jeffries that resurfaced from an interview that he had done previously. And he said in that interview that the company only wanted attractive, all-American, cool kids to wear their brand. And to me, when I read something like all-American, that's very much a dog whistle for white to me. It's coded 100%. Language for white. And yes, you can be like, oh, but they had some shirtless male Abercrombie models that were African-American. So they weren't racist, but it's like, no, 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 no.
It's still very, very, very pigeonholed.
It's very much the exception to the rule.
Uh-huh.
Abercrombie, I don't even think really ever made a secret of the fact that they were like, we are a brand for football players, cheerleaders, and preppy popular kids. Like that was what they were going for.
Yes,
and people who were wealthy enough to afford that brand.
Yeah, and the end of that quote that you began says, a lot of people don't belong in our clothes and they can't belong. Are we exclusionary? Absolutely. I mean, that says it all right there. Like, and that's what I was, you know, kind of speaking on the beginning of this episode. it is the brand's intent to design what their customer base is going to look like. And when somebody has such an unbelievably twisted view of what that's supposed to be, they can then project that onto the world as much as they want. And it makes us begin to take on that same thought process.
And it's terrible, too, because I know that there are a lot of people who would say, like, what's wrong with a brand being exclusive, right? Like, what's wrong with that? But when it's marketed towards literal children, it's marketed towards teenagers, people in middle school and high school, which is already an incredibly difficult time.
Yeah.
I think adding these additional kind of like classist, racist undertones to a brand that is supposed to be the pinnacle of popularity.
Right.
I think it does perpetuate these like classist, racist notions in school.
Right. And I get a different vibe from exclusionary and exclusive. Exclusive to me means it's maybe going to be more expensive, better made, limited time, you know, something like that, where exclusionary is like, there's a whole group of people that we don't want. It's not about our product being so fantastic and exclusive. It's about, we need to make sure that there's a whole group of people or multiple groups of people that don't get to be involved in this at all, to make sure our only demographic is this one person. And like, mm-hmm. That's what's so unbelievably frustrating. And they have come under fire for their employment practices as well.
Oh yeah. I knew a girl who I went to high school with who worked at Abercrombie. It was hell. Like, she told me about it. And again, we're talking about children. Like, she was in high school. Like, we didn't feel like children at the time, but she was a teenager. And
I think friend Emily worked at Abercrombie too in high school at one point and hated it.
It was ridiculous. The pressure that they put on her, they controlled her appearance.
Oh my gosh. Point,
they controlled how she wore her hair, what color it was, and they did control what she weighed. Like, you had to weigh under a certain amount.
That was one thing that I remember hearing all the time around the mall when I was like in Abercrombie. Always,
what does that do to a 16-year-old girl, a 17-year-old girl?
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely horrible things. And they've also come under fire for discriminating against Black, Latinx, and Asian Americans for floor sales positions and store management positions. They were known to only recruit employees from primarily white fraternities and sororities, a practice they promised they would stop doing in like 2013 or whenever all that came out. There have also been numerous lawsuits over the company's, quote, look policy, including the firing of a Muslim woman in San Mateo, California, and the mistreatment of a differently abled employee as well.
Not surprising at all. Not surprising at all.
Yeah, there was the woman who was differently abled in one of the articles that I read. She is missing a forearm and one of her arms. And so there was some sort of like agreement that like she wouldn't have to wear certain items of clothing that they had and certain things like that. Like, she could just wear what she felt comfortable with in the store or whatever. And then her bosses got like hard on her about like what she was wearing and made her have to kind of like display it more, which she didn't feel comfortable with, and, you know, different things like that, that just put their employees in really difficult positions. And like we were just saying, I feel like most of the people, I don't know how it is now, but most people that work jobs like that are typically like high school students.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there were, again, college age students when you're talking about fraternities and sororities and things like that. But yeah, I think in general, it's mostly teenagers. And what are you saying about somebody whenever you're saying, if you're going to work here, if you're going to wear our clothes, you need to be under 120 pounds or whatever it is. It's incredibly damaging. I think it would take a long time to undo that kind of thinking. I know a friend, I have a friend we both know, who was in a theater company where they would weigh them, all the women, not the men, but all the women would have weekly weigh-ins in front of everybody else.
Yeah.
It was a theater company. So for her, you know, having gone through something like that, it affects her to this day.
Yeah.
And it has taken years and years of therapy to undo that mentality.
Right.
So absolutely, I would not allow my teenage daughter to work in an environment like this. I wish a motherfucker would. I really do. I wish.
I mean, then there's going to have to be a lot of other things that you're going to have to shield your daughter from, because, I mean, think about all of the sports that are so, like, particular about aesthetic and pageantry and acting and theater. I mean, it's everywhere. It's literally, like, shoved in our faces all the times that we are supposed to, like, look, act, behave, and be a certain way. And it's absolutely crippling.
And your value
and
is
damaging.
Intrinsically tied to this. As well, like, I think that that's a big part of it, is like, you're saying that my value is intrinsically tied to my weight
100% or my size of clothing.
Yeah, which is something that I certainly struggled with, like, absolutely feeling that way.
Yes.
That, like, I'm only of value.
I think most people do. Like, mm-hmm. I really think that, like, especially because we're people that like factual things like numbers and sizes and being able to evaluate things in ourselves in certain ways. And the more tangible that is, the easier it is for us to get wrapped up in it. And that's why literally everybody can relate to it in some way, shape, or form.
Well, and
you
the
know?
World has reinforced it at every turn.
Right.
The world has reinforced it at every turn. And I'm grateful to see that that is starting to change, that we're calling it out more, which is why having conversations like this is so important. It's why calling brands out is so important.
Yes.
Because the conversation, the narrative around this stuff has got to shift.
Yeah.
The amount of damage that it does is absolutely unacceptable.
Agreed.
So speaking of that, let's jump into one that did a number on me growing up. Because
let's do
it. I said, I mean, I couldn't really afford Abercrombie growing up. So I just said, fuck it, I'll shop at Hot Topic, and changed my entire personality.
Here for it.
But
you do
one,
you.
That for me, as somebody who was like very eager to grow up, very excited about things like being old enough to wear lingerie and feel sexy, Victoria's Secret had, like, I cannot emphasize enough, and I know that it might seem weird now because Victoria's Secret now kind of feels like a brand that's almost washed up. It's like not as big a deal, but
it really
I
is just kind of like an everyday mall brand. But when
yes,
we were kids,
absolutely.
It really was presented as
hold.
Like
a chokehold on the early 2000s, man. It
oh my
really
god, the Victoria's
did.
Secret fashion show was like everything.
Everything. Like the early 2000s, Victoria's Secret and Pink. I remember when they came out with Pink, which was supposed to be for like teenagers.
Bless those sweatpants. I lived in them with the different
oh, yeah.
colors. They were
and
I had like a
PJs
lime green.
Comfy.
Oh, their mm-hmm. PJs. They had very, very, very soft tops as well. Like they're just regular cotton shirts and everything. Their yoga pants were very soft. Oh yeah, they had me hook, line, and sinker for probably
and
a good
again,
10 years.
This was a very materialistic time period. Like this
yes.
time period, having these kinds of like accessible brands where you could get pants that said Pink on the butt and that was like a status symbol.
I was just
school.
Gonna say it's a status symbol. It isn't about just wearing the style that's in. It's about wearing that specific brand and showing
right.
off that you can, you know, afford to like live mm-hmm. the life of that brand.
And it also said something for me. It felt very, even if it was Pink, like not Victoria's Secret, but the Pink brand.
Yeah.
It said, I'm grown up. And it also evoked
uh-huh.
this like idea of like, I had to go into the sexy store to buy these pants. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
yeah.
all of that played into it for me.
Yeah.
And so
for me, I think it was a way to wear sweatpants every day for like 2 years without having to like say like, oh, but I like don't look cute. I could like still like somewhat like look cute and go to school, but I literally just wore sweatpants and sweatshirts every single day.
That's me now. That's who I am now. Like literally, I just want to be in sweats at this point in my life. But at that point, I just wanted to look cute. Like
right.
I just wanted to look cute.
Well, and especially for me when I started dating, it was a really big deal for me that all of my bras and underwear had to come from Victoria's
oh, yeah.
Secret. Or I remember also getting a couple bras from like Abercrombie once, but like there really was something about like, because I think men had such an obsession with
yes.
Victoria's Secret as well, that there was
yes.
this like idea pushed upon women where it's like, okay, well, men want us all to be these angels, right?
Yes.
So when my boyfriend takes my top off when I'm 16, he better see the most adorable
the
hot pink.
Yes.
Yes.
Right?
And the most adorable mm-hmm. hot pink lacy perfect plunge push-up bra because he's going to give a shit. You know what right. I mean?
And like that was another thing is like, as an adult, we know that lingerie is not meant to be worn as regular undergarments. But at the time it was like, you could only afford so many bras. So we were going right. out and buying these like lacy bras that then we were wearing underneath like regular t-shirts in school because we owned two bras. You know what I mean? Which is not what those are for. Like you're supposed to have your regular everyday bras and then you have like a couple like nice lacy bras that are strictly for sexy time. Like right. that's all that's for.
Well, and a big thing for me as well, and I think this still kind of goes underneath the whole body shaming category. And Keegan, I know you feel this struggle too. I am perfectly fine with my boobs now. They have grown since I was a child, but I was called mosquito bites. I was jokingly called double D because I was so obviously not a double D. And so for me, I was very self-conscious about how flat chested I was. So I would make whatever I had work.
So, oh yeah, you're buying that like push up.
The massive like air pocket push up bra mm-hmm. that is somehow making my like triple A boobs look like a C cup somehow. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that was all I wanted because I didn't feel womanly enough. Like I still joke to this day, I'm like a 2x4. You know what I mean? There's just no curve to me. And that was something that like I've always really wanted. Like I've always really wanted to have like a butt and boobs and hips and be like that sexy Victoria's Secret angel. And I would look in the mirror and I'd be like, well, there's frumpy old Madigan again. But and that was just really hard for me.
The funny thing about that is that the Victoria's Secret angel, right? So when we're talking about that, so in 2014, Victoria's Secret released a lingerie collection called Body. And they had this ad campaign. And in this ad campaign, it was all of the Victoria's Secret angels. And it said across it, the perfect body. And every single one of these women had the same body. Like if you had shown it to me.
It was so barf.
If you had literally like... I'll post it when I post the episode. I mean, I remember this. If you want to see it, it wasn't that long ago.
It was like, what, 7 years ago now? I don't know math. But like, yeah. It's very like, it feels very present to me still, that whole ad.
Yeah, I mean, and you could, if you put your arm over their faces and heads, with the exception of there are two models of color in this ad, with the exception of that, they would be interchangeable. Their bodies are exactly the same. And, you know, for as much as it gave us all a complex about having like Adriana Lima's like bust line, their bodies were very kind of straight up and down. Like there's a lot of criticism also from very curvy women feeling like they didn't fit the standard either because
because also the sizing, they're probably also not making their super plungy, sexy, hot pink, lacy bras in a size G. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Like it's very, very limited. And this particular advertisement, so they'd already faced a fair amount of criticism, right? They'd already faced a fair amount of criticism, but this advertisement got widespread backlash online. It was criticized for rightly body shaming women.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of campaigns that kind of did similar shoots where they had women of varying ages and abilities and sizes and colors doing kind of the same photo shoot.
Yeah, and I don't remember if it was during this time or if it was something that just kind of continued afterward, but I remember posting a picture of this on our Instagram like years ago probably, but it was a group of like quote-unquote plus-size models in front of Victoria's Secret in just like nude-colored lingerie in a form of protest. Yes. And I've seen that happen a lot since then as well.
Yeah, so there was a petition that was circulated online that demanded that Victoria's Secret apologize and change the poster, and it got over 30,000 signatures, and the hashtag #IAmPerfect started trending on Twitter. So VS Angels and their ads, they held women up to this absolutely impossible standard that left like 99.9% of us feeling insecure about our bodies. At best, I really do feel like it made us feel insecure about our bodies at best and promoted disordered eating at worst. I remember around the time that the Victoria's Secret fashion show would happen every year, magazines would spotlight. Yes, they would spotlight different angels and highlight their workout and dieting routines
days
before the show.
Guess who literally, like, this is how psychopaths crazy I was in my eating disordered mind. And I wrote in my notes during the whole, like, Kate Moss heroin chic stuff. My lock screen for, like, a year was that, like, nothing feels as good as skinny feels skinny, quote. Yeah,
nothing and tastes as good as skinny
yeah,
feels.
Whatever. Yeah. Fuck that fucking shit. Yeah, whatever. It's yeah, bullshit. Yeah. But, like, I would, like, look up Victoria's Secret model diet and write it in my journal so I could remember right. it, and that would be ingrained in my fucking head, and then every yes. time I'd eat something else I felt like a piece of shit. And yes, I was predisposed to a lot of other things that would make me obsess about something like that, but like it just goes to show you how it really can like make you fucking obsess about something that is so unbelievably arbitrary and harmful. Well,
I think that it was incredibly prevalent at this time. Like, I think that it was incredibly...
Oh, I wasn't weird for doing it. Like, and we were all open about talking about that stuff, too.
Well,
that's the other thing.
What I was going to say is that it's kind of wild, and it is interesting to me how far we've come even in that, like, 7-year span, 10-year span, because this stuff was published in magazines as though this was something to aspire to, as yeah. though this was an ideal. Whereas now, I think rightly, everyone would be like, whoa, like that doesn't seem okay, because they would advocate for things like eating a handful of grapes and some nuts and not drinking any water because they want their abs to stand out, and working out obsessively, right? Like that was the kind of thing they would promote, and that was held up as like, oh, this is something that we should all do if we want to look like a Victoria's Secret angel.
Yeah,
and nobody questions that.
And like that's a way to sustain a life. Spoiler, it is not. It is not.
But they never framed it like that. I think that was part of the problem was they're promoting
And they never
this
showed
thing.
The models afterwards having to go to In-N-Out and binge eat
exactly.
on 16 burgers because they haven't
exactly.
eaten in a week.
No, they presented
it's not
it as though this is a lifestyle that could be sustainable for you, and that if you want to look like a Victoria's Secret angel, you need to do this day in, day out, 365.
Ugh,
and
barf,
that,
again.
First of all, you shouldn't be doing it at all. Like, even they shouldn't be doing it the 2 weeks leading up to their to walking in the show. That speaks to the insanely high standards that we put models through and that we have, you know, for our beauty standards in
general.
For
another episode.
Yeah, absolutely. But beyond that, it was framed as this is a lifestyle that is yeah. achievable. And I remember, like, I would go through my, like, Cosmo Girl magazines, and every single one of them had dieting tips and yep. workout tips. And I would rip them out and I would put them in a separate booklet. And that was like my Bible for
yeah.
like these are recipes that I can have. These yeah. are workouts that I can do to
and
get
how
that
unbelievably
body.
Twisted is it for actual children that we were to be able to be obsessing over these things so mm-hmm. much because
we were legit taking
yeah. notes. You know what I mean? And I'm hoping that at least this has been discussed enough by now that that is not happening to teenagers in this era as often. I'm sure it is still very prevalent, but I'm hoping that because of the changing in a lot of our advertising and in a lot of these brands as well, hopefully some of that is changing. But it is not gone, because there is another brand that I want to talk about that I see at work all the time and I hate it so much, and that is Brandy Melville.
Yes. Can I just, sorry, before we talk about Brandy Melville, can I just wrap it up with Victoria's Secret really quickly?
Do it. Go.
Okay. So just to wrap it up with Victoria's Secret, in the wake of the body positivity movement of the last several years, and after several quote unquote faux pas, including the aforementioned Perfect Body campaign, the chief marketing officer, Ed Rozek, told Vogue in 2018 that the brand was not interested in hiring transgender or plus size models, and sales began to plummet after like those series of events happened. So
Thank
in 2021,
God.
Yeah, in 2021, Victoria's Secret has made an attempt to rebrand, which to me is a very thinly veiled and hollow attempt to win back consumers.
Right.
And they have now begun to hire models of varying sizes, colors, and abilities. And while I appreciate this, I feel like this is important to say, because I do appreciate this. I think visibility and representation is incredibly important. To me, this feels like capitalist activism,
right?
Like they've realized that they've lost money and their kind of like hyper exclusive, exclusionary idea of what their brand should be isn't working for them anymore because the culture has shifted.
Yep.
And so they've decided to change it. And to me, it's not enough for me to forgive them for all of the damage they did to me.
No, it's really not enough.
In high school.
Very much not enough. I do want to, because I don't want us to forget to mention them at any point. I love Aerie. I have to say, I love what they've done with their ad campaigns. They don't do any touch-ups or anything like that. They're so inclusive with their models. If I forget to mention it later, bless you, Aerie. You're wonderful.
So I have a list of some body positive fashion brands.
Love this.
To mention at the end of this, and Aerie is on that list.
Wonderful. Yes. Good, because I love them. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Brandy Melville. Brandy Melville is not a person. It is like the two owners' names combined. I was a little bit disappointed in that, but I should have known because these people are pieces of shit. The company's founder, owner, and CEO is a douche canoe by the name of Steven Marson. Brandy Melville projects an image of young, thin, pretty whiteness and aims to sell clothes to that exact demographic, as the majority of their clothing is one size fits most.
Which is ludicrous because I was taking
most?
not even close. Because I was looking at, this brand in the prep for this episode. Because before TikTok, I'd not really heard of them. People talk about them.
Such they're a really, really big California brand. So there was,
that doesn't surprise me at all.
There was only a few of them, and there was one at the Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica that I was obsessed with because I loved their sweatshirts and their sweaters in particular. I really liked the material. I thought they were really great. I didn't really ever buy any pants there. I bought maybe a couple like basic tank tops and stuff because it really was like, if you didn't fit that item, you were out of luck. Like you just couldn't wear
it. And as like, the thing is, as a petite person, sometimes I have like kind of short and stuff. Like sometimes I have trouble finding skirts and stuff that hit me in the right place that aren't like too long for me or whatever. So I understand the appeal of wanting to have a like of having a petite kind of like brand or something that like is supposed to fit shorter bodies or
but
whatever.
But not this, being marketed as a petite brand. And it's also, they don't really even market the fact that their clothes are one size fits most. And that's what's really frustrating. So if you were to go into Brandy Melville and say, get a pair of pants, most of their pants are going to be a 25 inch waist, which is...
Right. And most of their models are 5'7 or taller, like normal model height.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But a 25-inch waist is such an unbelievably small percentage of not even just teenage women, but women in general who would be typically shopping at these stores.
Right.
That is so much smaller than any of the average person. So they are truly looking for people who are either like prepubescent or killing themselves to be prepubescent. I'm not saying that. Like there are other, like there, I'm a petite person. I can fit into Brandy Melville stuff. Like, you know, I'm not just saying it's only for unhealthy people. But that is the image that they're projecting, because especially the fact that they use so many really, really young models, but they still advertise for adults to wear their clothing as well, which is, it skews with your brain a lot.
I mean, again, it perpetuates this disordered eating mentality, because it has actually become, in my prep for this episode, again, they are not a brand that I was super familiar with, but in my prep for this episode, it does appear that, especially in places like California, wearing Brandy Melville, it says something about your status. It says something about who you are. It upholds this idea that thinness equals goodness, or thinness is something that you should aspire to as a matter of worth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, and it is a bit of a status symbol to be able to wear something that's very obviously from Brandy Melville and wear it around and be able to say, oh, you know, I'm able to shop in this store. Like, that does say something.
Right, and you can't.
Yes.
Right, and you probably can't. Right, yeah. And so it does, when it works sometimes for girls who are prepubescent, but as their bodies grow and change and they want to be able to still fit into that mold of like, I can still shop at this place, it does lend itself to really unhealthy relationships with their bodies.
Especially
and with food.
Especially when the brand is telling you that you can grow with the brand. Like, if you go right. online, like, it is geared toward adults with these pictures of what I would assume to be not adults in a lot of them, you know what I mean? But
right.
it's yeah. but it's telling you that you should be able to still fit into their clothes even when your body is growing and changing, and that's really messed up.
Right, right. And, you know, these clothes are, when they say one size fits most, it should be said that these clothes fit a extra small to a small.
Yeah.
That's how limited it is.
Yeah.
It's not like, this
the
is
tops
something that's,
maybe to a medium. Maybe.
Right, right. It's not like this is, sometimes you'll buy something on Amazon that's like a one size fits all kind of thing, or one size fits most, and it's like kind of a very loose fitting thing, or it has like
it's
drawstrings
like
or yeah, or something like that. That's not what this is.
No.
This is, these are literally clothes that are made for extra small and small, and even then it's very limited by body type, right?
Yeah.
Like, I could maybe fit into their clothes, but they're clearly made for people who do not have a butt and thighs.
Yeah.
You know what I
yeah.
mean? It, you can be the right size and the wrong shape and you won't fit into their
exactly.
clothes.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
like, it is very clearly specifically for a certain type of woman.
Yes. And not
or girl.
Yeah, exactly. And not only are the customers fat shamed, but the employees are fat shamed. So actually, there is a girl that I work with now that used to work there and told me a few stories. Like, she was meant to only work in the back because she wasn't pretty enough. Yeah, like, it's like, this is recent stuff. Like, it's really, really shitty. And they treat
we gotta put these companies out of business.
Oh,
this
my
is
gosh.
Ridiculous.
This place makes my blood boil. So most retail outposts must send full body selfies to brand executives daily, with some of the employees being as young as 14.
Daily?
Daily. They have to show what they're wearing to work. They have to show, and because it started off, like, I don't know if this is still happening up to now, but this isn't a company where there are that many storefronts. So I think it was pretty easy for the CEO and for like the higher ups to be able to keep tabs on what their employees were wearing and doing and what they looked like.
I'm sorry. I need to go into one of these stores, find a 14-year-old who's working and be like, call your mom. I just want to talk.
Oh, for real.
Like,
yeah.
who is letting
because,
their 14-year-old be subjected to this?
Right?
Absolutely
because
not.
Then if Marson didn't like what he saw, the employee could be fired on the spot. One former California employee said, in retrospect, it's really fucking weird that we all, us underage people, had to text this mid to late 30s guy photos of
no.
what we were wearing.
No, 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 no. No.
I told you.
Absolutely not.
Another former employee, Luca Rotondo, who worked as the senior vice president of the company, said that he had been ordered to fire hundreds of staffers for things such as the worker being heavy or, quote, unattractive. If Marson thought the store had too many black employees.
What does that mean?
I know.
Oh, girl. Oh, I'm getting mad.
Also, if Marson thought the store had too many black employees, they would be replaced with a new white employee. One, Luca also said in that interview, if she was black, if she was fat, he didn't want them in the store. Marson would also sit with the other senior executives above the showroom and check out the customers. If they liked how a girl looked, they hit a button. This is so Harvey Weinstein. They hit a button that would signal the cashier to get the customer's details and offer her a job.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah. They even, employees would be asked to model clothes in front of Marson, with a lot of them feeling like if they changed in front of him, that would get them this like special employee status, which means shopping sprees, work trips to Hawaii and Italy, and the use of a quote, brandy apartment in Soho, New York. So these women are like, doing
young
these
women.
Young women are doing these special favors for this guy in order to maybe hopefully get this special employee status.
Okay, well, I'm furious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, along with that, there was a whole investigation done by Insider, and in that investigation, they found hundreds of screenshots, reviewed by team members that show Marson and others swapping pornography, racist memes, and Nazi propaganda in a chat with more than 30 men.
Hold the phone. Why? What? Why?
Fuck Brandy Melville.
How is this company still in business?
I don't know.
How are they still operating?
And they have other companies below them. There's another designer by the name of...
Please give me a list, because we're going to post that to our Instagram, because I don't want anybody shopping at anything affiliated with any of these people.
No, there's a company called John Galt, and they are through Brandy Melville as well, and they're kind of like... special thing is that this designer only makes a certain amount of like one design. So it is kind of a thing that like if you have this one John Galt item, you very well could be like one of only X amount of people that have that, and then you're never going to be able to get it again. So there is also this like exclusivity of the actual product as well with some of their other like kind of like branched down companies and stuff. It's a whole mess of crap. But should we
go? We gotta stop it. We gotta stop it with this stuff. I gotta tell you, like, it's as somebody who will be 32 soon, it does not matter. Like, what you wear, genuinely, it does not matter that much.
And
wear
clothes
that you like, that you feel comfortable and good in, that feel like yourself. You can find those anywhere. You can find them at the thrift store. Like, you do not need to wear labels, because I guarantee you that the people who matter do not mind. They don't mind that you're not wearing a label, or you're not wearing something specific.
You just quoted my favorite quote of all time, and I hate that one of my favorite quotes of all time is from such a racist motherfucker like Dr. Seuss.
Oh, yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, but the people who matter don't mind.
They don't.
And the people who mind don't matter. That's absolutely... Look, if your friends care about the fact that you're not wearing Brandy Melville, then you need some new friends. I'm your friend now. We're done.
I am your friend now.
Yeah, we're done. Like,
we
immediately know. Get rid of them.
All right. Well, should we talk about the absolute dumpster fire that is Lululemon?
Of course we should.
We have to. Like, they take the crazy cake, in my opinion. I think Brandy Melville is like, they're nipping at their heels. But Lululemon has been going strong in their cultist, crazy, racist, misogynistic bullshit for far too fucking long.
You know what? There's a real common theme of a lot of male CEOs owning companies that are targeted towards women. That's
and
another
very
thing to
young
keep in
women
mind.
Too.
That's another thing to keep in mind is like these men are trying to control women's bodies.
The
in
patriarchy
a whole
will
way.
Get you. It'll get you.
It's why it's important to have women-owned brands.
Yes.
It really, truly is.
So important. And to, like, diversify brands, too. Like, my God. Yeah. So important. So let's get into Lululemon a little bit. I feel like so much of this controversy came out in 2013. There must have been something going on in 2013 with a lot of these fashion brands where all this stuff
People
got
were
leaked.
Waking up.
Clearly, it's wild. So in 2013, the founder, Chip Wilson, was asked to step down following a number of allegations against him by the public. Chip has a history of commenting on women's bodies, like saying
Chip.
That, yeah, fucking, I'm just going to call him Chip because he's such
Chip.
A fucking Chip,
Ugh.
Right? Ugh. I've met some great Chips, but whatever.
Yeah, hashtag not all Chips, but still.
But still,
yeah.
Chip. Ugh. He said that their yoga pants don't work for women who have thighs that touch, that birth control pills are causing divorce rates to spike, like all
Thank,
sorts of
Are
craziness.
You an expert in that, Chip? Thank you so much for your opinion.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting so heated. It might be the wine.
It might be.
I'm having some wine. Maybe it's the wine.
Yeah. And he's been trashed since day one. So the company was founded in 1998 with a Forbes enterprise value of $8.8 billion. The douche canoe claims to have named the company Lululemon. This is really horrible and honestly kind of trigger warning because it's like super, super racist and awful. He named it Lululemon because of the amount of L's in the name. He thought it would be funny for the Japanese buyers to say it. Trash. Absolute fucking trash.
You know, it's amazing to me when people are this genuinely awful.
Right?
Like, this is the same feeling that I get when I'm watching Succession and I'm like, people aren't like this, right?
I haven't started that show yet and I really want to. Am I going to love it? I love Kieran Culkin.
Well, here's the thing. Succession is such a good show. It is filmed so well. The acting and the writing is superb. But I can only watch one or two episodes at a time because they're awful. Like I want to believe that they're caricatures of what like super wealthy people are like,
but I don't think so.
I think that this is what these people are like, and they're just like genuinely horrible.
They're horrible human beings. So back into 2013, some customers began complaining about the quality of the clothing, with some items being too sheer or having holes appear or falling apart completely after just a few wears. And this led to a huge recall of all of these pants, and for douchebag Chip to blame the customers for wearing the clothing improperly or for having body shapes not made for his clothing.
What?
Yeah, he blamed the fat customer.
You make stretchy pants, Chip. Like, they should fit everybody. Like, that's
and
the
not be fucking
sheer pants.
when you bend over. And that's the thing. A pair of Lululemon yoga pants are like $100 or $120. They're so expensive. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend $120 on a pair of pants and then do a downward dog with the entire class seeing my underpants. I don't want it. In 2021, a Business Insider report revealed that an unnamed company director pushed employees to create an All Lives Matter campaign to be displayed on their website after the murder of George Floyd. Now, this has nothing to do with body shaming, but I had to. This company sucks. So the employees were like, this is fucked up. We don't want to do that. We really don't want to make an All Lives Matter campaign. But they were kind of like forced to make this mock-up. But they were like, well, we're also going to make a Black Lives Matter campaign then at the same time. And that was actually the one that ended up being used. But
of
then
course, because it was more profitable for Chip.
Of course. But it still came up that there was this unnamed employee that was like forcing everybody to make this All Lives Matter design. The company has also come under fire for false advertising when selling leggings allegedly made of seaweed that came with certain health benefits, and legal disputes with other companies over intellectual property of its design of yoga pants. And I don't even mention the fact that there was a fucking murder that occurred in the store by an employee. This place is... There's a special place in hell for Lululemon.
I'm not going to lie to you. I definitely, when I'm shopping at Ralph's and I see a woman with yoga pants on and I see that little Lululemon like insignia on it, I give a little side eye.
Yes.
I do. I'm like,
I do have to say, this is like
completely innocent, you know.
Yeah, I do totally have a workaround.
There's a part of me that's like, I don't know, man.
I have a workaround with these, and I don't. And listeners, tell me if this is a bad workaround. But I work in a secondhand store, so we have a lot of Lululemon stuff. I don't work out, so like, I don't really have any use for workout clothes or anything like that. But to me, if I were to buy a pair of Lululemon pants, I would rather buy them through my store secondhand or on Poshmark or something like that, because they're already out in the world, than actually give money to that company. Same thing with Brandy Melville. Like, I bought a sweatshirt, you know, like, but I don't want to give them that money directly. But when I find it at a thrift store or a secondhand store and I'm like, I like the sweatshirt, I'll buy it.
I think it can go any number of ways, right? Because like, I definitely feel that way about certain brands. Like, I used to like Dolls Kill. Like, I think they're such a cool kind of like alternative
goth
brand.
They're a very cool brand, but...
But they're extremely racist. They're very problematic.
Yeah.
Do not buy from Dolls Kill.
Yeah,
they've stolen from indie creators.
Yeah, we just stopped kind of like taking in a lot of Dolls Kill stuff to the store because we used to take it in a ton because it was like very... like hip to what like one of our demographics are, but then like all this stuff started coming out more and more and we're like,
they steal from indie creators all the time and they don't give credit. It's terrible.
Yeah,
you know. And so there has been a question around like, okay, but like if you see it at a thrift store, can you buy it? And in general, I think shopping secondhand is so much more sustainable that I'm always pro shopping secondhand. But what I would warn about and why I probably wouldn't buy Lululemon, because there is the logo on it.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't buy anything that says Dolls Kill because I'm still giving you free promotion. Like, I'm still promoting this brand that I don't believe in.
Totally.
And so I probably wouldn't wear Lululemon leggings either because it has the Lululemon logo on it and I'm not trying to promote it. You know, but in general, I would say, yeah, if there's something that you like, but say, you know, you don't want to support Urban Outfitters, but you find something Urban Outfitters at a Crossroads or a Buffalo Exchange or whatever, then yeah, I don't personally have a problem with that, but that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, but I'm like, there's probably someone out there that has a reason why that's not a good idea. I'm totally open to hearing that opinion, but that's kind of my workaround with that. But back to I hate saying Lululemon. Back to Lululemon, there was a former employee that discussed the fact that all of their size 10 and up items are usually just kind of like clumped into the back of the store behind a table, not folded, not displayed. So that whenever customers who would be of that size walk into the store, they look around and they don't even see anything in their size.
They have
size.
To ask, which is embarrassing.
It's
embarrassing. Or can be embarrassing.
Well, and because, and who's even going to do that? Like, if I were to walk into a store and look around and not see my size anywhere, that's my cue to leave.
So are they only making it so that they can say that they offer sizes up to that size?
I guess,
because like otherwise you're wasting money.
Well, and
like, you're leaving money on the table.
But this is the thing. The douchebag Chip says that the reason he doesn't make more plus size clothing is because it takes 30% more fabric to create the clothing, which means that he would have to charge a higher price for them. So the designs they do have in sizes 10 and up are essentially like designs from 4 years ago and the same pants that they just keep out there. There's never any like new designs.
This has always felt like bullshit to me because then what I don't understand is there's a big difference, right? There just is, between a size 0 and a size 10. But you can sell a size 0 and a size 10 for the same amount of money. Why is every size not on a sliding scale then?
Yeah.
Why is it not?
Yeah.
Why aren't you saying sizes 0 through 4 are this price?
Yep.
And then sizes 6 through 8 are this price.
Exactly.
And then so on. Why? Why is it suddenly an issue whenever it's like...
Because he's being called on it. Because he's being called on it.
It's bullshit.
Yeah, it's complete bullshit.
Like
it's absolute bullshit. And the thing that's really upsetting is that this cutoff point at Lululemon is actually where most American women tend to live. The breakoff point to what is considered to being plus size in the US is mostly at about a size 12. Some say it's a size 14 and above, though the average dress size among American women is a size 14, according to a 2013 study by Women's Wear Daily. So that would mean that the majority of American women would fall into the category of the plus sized items at this store that they're not even showing as an option for the majority of people that could come into the store. I just said that really weird, but you know what I mean.
No, I understand exactly okay. what you're saying. I really didn't expect this topic to make me as angry as I feel.
Well, hey, I'm always here for a surprising anger fest.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm tired. I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know what? The amount of energy I had was so low already, and you just spent it all.
Fucking douchebag Chip. But I do, we are reaching an hour, and I do want to highlight the brands that are good brands to keep an eye on.
Absolutely.
But before we do that, I do really, really want a quick talk about the sizing chart, because I think that's another thing that is
good idea.
Something that we can very easily compare ourselves to. And so let's just even talk about where we even got this sizing chart, this standard sizing chart. There was a study in 1941 of women's body sizes for clothing, and that was to be the new global universal size chart. Of course, the study focused on white women, most of whom wore girdles and corsets under their clothing, so their measurements were off. This is the system that we've pretty much run since that time, and the hope is that technology can change that. There are some people that want to create like 3D imaging for size charts and things like that, but for the most part, when we are looking at you know, what size to get online when we're ordering on Amazon or whatever, that is a standard that has been set to us by 1941 white women. So don't compare yourselves to them. And they were wearing fucking girdles and corsets. Fuck it, you know?
And they're so inconsistent anyway that it doesn't even matter. Like, that was something that I learned whenever I was trying on wedding dresses and stuff.
Yep.
Was like, wedding dress sizing, completely different.
Yes.
Completely different.
And that's
from,
why...
like, regular dress sizing. Doesn't matter.
And
like,
all those things don't matter. I have customers that will complain to me on the regular about not being able to fit into certain clothes. And I always tell them, I say, you are not meant to fit the clothes. The clothes are meant to fit you.
Absolutely.
And especially at a store that I work at where you're trading in clothes and you're here to buy new stuff. I'm like, this is an opportunity for you to find an amazing new wardrobe of clothes that actually fit you and make you feel awesome.
Right. I mean, and that's what we should be focused on. And I understand in this new world where we're shopping so much online, and it is actually important that you know, like, maybe not your size, but like your dimensions,
so
that you
right?
can figure out like what fits you right. It should be about what you feel good and confident in.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it that's what should matter. Like, trying to force yourself to fit into a certain size, that's not going to be helpful for you. Find the size that fits your body and makes you feel good and wear that thing.
And also,
and I feel
like
that's... No, go ahead.
Also find the brands that make you feel really good. Because I think like once you find a brand that has, you know, sizing and fit and design and whatever that like makes you feel good. And I mean, just whenever you even find whatever aesthetic it is that you feel like applies to who you are as a person, like knowing those things about yourself and knowing those brands is another way to kind of make shopping easier without it feeling like it's such a harmful burden.
Right. Yeah. And it doesn't make you feel so bad about yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's, I feel that way when I go to try on clothes, like in the dressing room. I swear there's something about the Target dressing room. They do something in there.
They do.
Where
it's
just
the
like,
lighting,
what is happening?
I think.
The lighting makes me look like I'm just like, I hate it. I want to get out of here so quickly. But that's how you should feel across the board. Your style, don't adhere to trends and stuff like that. It should always be about how you feel.
Yep.
In the clothes, like that's the most important thing. And I know as we get to talking about kind of more inclusive brands here at the end of the episode, there's a whole conversation to be had around fast fashion and sustainability and stuff like that. And of course, those things are very important. That deserves its own episode. And some of these brands maybe aren't the most sustainable, although here's what I'll say to that. If you are like me and maybe you bought something cheap or that was fast fashion, if you are wearing it for a considerable amount of time, if you keep it for a really long time, that does help to make it more sustainable. Now, it doesn't really address any issues of labor discrimination and things like that that happen within certain fashion brands. We're very aware of that. We understand that these are two different issues, and right now we're talking about like size inclusivity and stuff like that.
Right.
But we will definitely address issues to do with fast fashion
again
at a later date
for another episode.
Yeah. All right, so let's jump into talking about some size inclusive brands that you can check out. Okay. So eShakti is a completely customizable retailer. They offer sizes from 0 to 36 wide, and they have complete customization through exact body measurements. So as long as you know your body measurements, which I think is super
cool,
that totally
it's
changes
like tailoring.
The game. Yeah, absolutely. Because for me, you know, everyone's body is different,
right?
And stuff's gonna fit on you different. And if you can afford to take your clothes to get tailored, it absolutely changes the way you look because it matches whatever your body type is. So you can have various neckline sleeves and garment length to fit your height. So that's an incredible resource. I've never shopped through them, but now I want to.
Yeah, me too.
We talked earlier about
Aerie.
Is it Aerie?
It's American Aerie. Eagle. It's Aerie. I love them. That's where I buy like most of my bras and underwear. I found a few more brands like lately, but for probably like a good 8 years, all my shit was Aerie.
Yeah, and they've totally stopped retouching their photos a couple of years ago, and they are more inclusive in terms of their models and their sizing.
Their website is like chef's kiss beautiful. I love it. They've done it all right.
Yeah, and you and I have talked. I recently got a Parade order. I would include them as well. If you're looking for like bras and underwears, loungewear, bodysuits, those kinds of things, like Parade is also really great. They have very diverse models and large and small sizes.
And they have bralettes for like very large chested people, which is like super rare. I could not talk more highly of Parade. Sponsor us first and then I'll talk more highly of you.
Absolutely. Yes. ASOS, which is a brand that I have definitely shopped quite a bit.
Yeah, can be a bit fast fashion, but is a website that is so user friendly in particular. Like you, and there's so many brands within like their website and stuff as well. Like that is such an amazing, like user friendly, very size inclusive.
There are so many options, and they feature various sizing from straight, curvy, plus, as well as tall and petite styles. So there have definitely been things that I've found on there that I'm like, oh, this is really cute, but it's in a tall. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's just not for me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So there, but there are like, there's a very wide variety, and you can shop specifically by like, if you're like, I'm over 5'8 as a woman, you can shop specifically in tall styles, and find stuff like that, which is really cool. And they even have a variety of like shoe styles. Like they carry like
wide and narrow, which honestly for me is huge because I have the narrowest feet known to man and I love slides. So I do buy my shoes from ASOS sometimes because I can look under that narrow shoe area.
Yep. Swimsuits for All. So Swimsuits for All is obviously a swimsuit brand, and they are very size inclusive as well. They have clothing. I think they have swimsuits up to size 34. And what I loved when I was like scrolling through their Instagram is that, yes, I will say like the majority of their posts, even when they have plus size models, a lot of complaints about plus size models is that they still adhere to a very particular shape.
Right.
Right. Like a small waist, kind of bigger.
And more of an hourglass shape.
Mm-hmm. And they do have a lot of models like that. But then they do also have models who have different plus size shapes, like more of the apple shape with like a bigger middle and smaller legs. And they're showing what their swimsuits look like on that body type, which I think is so important.
It is so important. Because if you have a body type
that's not represented very often, it's, you want to see how the clothes look on someone like
especially if you're buying online, or if you just want a reference, you want to be able to see like not just what it's going to look like on, you know, you or I, but what it would look like on someone like you.
Yeah. And also, you know, spend some time on TikTok because there are lots of creators, like, you know, I want to say body positive, but probably not, just like body neutral creators who are like, this is the body I exist in.
Yeah.
And this is me trying on clothes so that you can see what this kind of outfit would look like on your body type, which is very, very cool.
And I love watching people try on clothes on TikTok.
Me too.
It's a weird thing.
All day. Love it. And then the last one that I have on this list is Eloquii, and they are a plus size brand. So they're not going to have, you know, size 0 through whatever. Their sizes start at 14 through 28, but it is fashion driven style, which I love because I know a lot of my friends who are plus size, their complaints are that they can't find fashionable clothing.
Yes. Right?
A lot of the things that they're being offered in quote unquote plus size sections of stores are matronly or dowdy or big.
Something that would be more an Elaine Bryant rather than in the same vein as a Forever 21, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And if it isn't a Forever 21, they don't get the same styles. They don't get the same patterns.
Yeah.
They don't get things that are trending right now. And so Eloquii, what's cool about them is that they focus on making sure that their styles are trendy
yeah.
and fun.
I love that.
So yeah.
So important. Well, very much got a great education this week on things that I already knew a little bit about, but definitely wanted to know more about. I hope that everybody listening who is a shopper has a better understanding of how these companies play such a huge role in how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about the clothing that we wear and how we present ourselves in the world. And so I'm glad that we got to kind of put some of these companies on blast. It was fun for me.
Fun and very upsetting.
So unbelievably upsetting. Yeah. But I like I like getting angry. It's kind of the whole point of the show, isn't it?
True.
All right.
True, true.
Very, very true. So we did discuss that there are a few more topics within this kind of umbrella topic that we want to cover in the future. But if there's anything else that you would like us to cover in future episodes, please email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or message us on Instagram at @angryneighborhoodfeminist. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with the fellow listeners on the group page. I don't want to forget to mention that we now have a merch store. So if you have not purchased your Angry Neighborhood Feminist merchandise, please go to
get someone an Angry Feminist mug for Christmas.
Right?
You know, that sounds good.
Get someone a Rage On tote. Mm-hmm. Get a baby a Slay the Patriarchy onesie. That's all I want. I just want to see a baby in that onesie so bad.
Send us your pictures.
Please do. We will put them on Instagram. It's going to be a party. So if you are interested in getting any of that merch, go to the link in our bio and have a great old time. Last but certainly not least, if you haven't done so, please hop on over to the Apple Podcast app and leave us a 5-star review with a quick sentence about why you enjoy the show. It brightens our day, and it truly is the greatest way that you can help us. All right.
Yeah.
That's all we have for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on.